You are listening to the Talking Information Center. My name is Jean. Today's date is June 10th, and I'll be reading from the Sun Chronicle. Former North Attleboro Church set to be demolished. The former First United Methodist Church on Route 1 is slated for demolition, with the property expected to be used for auto sales. Demolition is expected to begin soon on the 16,000-square-foot church built in 1963 and designed in a more modern style than traditional churches. The church and adjacent parsonage sits on 3 1/4 acres next to Hopkin Hill Avenue, Route 120, a gateway to downtown. A crane was at the site Tuesday morning, apparently preparing to remove the steeple. A chain-link fence was recently installed around the property. The building department issued a demolition permit to Tagrid Fayad in May, said Taylor O'Neill, the town's communications and information officer. We do not have a demolition date. No definitive plans for the property have been filed. We also do not have any site plans yet, so no application has been filed with our planning board, O'Neill said. The church announced in April 2024 that it would close and held its final service the following month, ending a long history of religious devotion and community service. The closure followed years of declining membership and financial struggles, challenges facing a growing number of churches locally and nationwide. Founded in 1858, the church supported community outreach efforts, donated to the local food pantry and other causes, and hosting support and recovery groups. Some neighbors have expressed concern about the property's future, saying they hope the buildings and its public use would remain. The property's hilly front lawn has been a popular sledding spot and was used for the church's annual Halloween pumpkin sale and fundraiser. The site has been vacant since the church closed in May 2024. It was purchased last summer for $3.5 million by Route 1 Management, which operates the adjacent Imperial Subaru dealership, formerly Patriot Subaru, which was sold in January. Owner Kevin Meehan operates several Imperial dealerships in Mendon and Milford and owns retail properties in the greater Milford area. In March, the planning board accepted a preliminary 4-lot commercial subdivision plan for the church site. We don't have any specific plans, Jonathan Silverstein, attorney for the owner, said at the time, adding that it would likely be months before definitive plans were submitted. The subdivision plan was intended to preserve existing commercial zoning, as town officials considered a bylaw to prohibit future new and used car dealerships. In February, the planning board supported combining the church lot with the Imperial Subaru parcel to protect the owner's rights under potential zoning changes, Silverstein said. In April, the town council approved a zoning amendment requiring a special permit from the planning board for future auto dealerships, aiming to encourage other types of businesses. Cumberland police investigate teen's death. Police are investigating what they describe as the suspicious death of an 18-year-old woman. Angelina Rocha was found unresponsive early Saturday morning at a home located on East Barrow Street, authorities said. The street is off Route 123 near the Attleboro line. Cumberland Police and Rhode Island State Police are investigating. No arrests have been made. Investigators spent Saturday at the home gathering evidence. Attleboro area, rest of region, back in significant drought. The Attleboro area and the rest of southeastern Massachusetts are back in a significant drought because of a prolonged lack of rainfall. Under the Massachusetts Drought Management Plan, Communities in a significant drought are limited to handheld outdoor watering only. Energy and Environmental Affairs Secretary Rebecca Tepper on Tuesday declared worsened drought conditions for southeastern Massachusetts and Cape Cod and the islands. Other regions remain at their current levels. Critical drought in the Northeast, significant drought in the Connecticut River Valley and central regions, and mild drought in the western region. Southeastern Massachusetts has moved in and out of drought conditions for nearly 2 years. The region returned to a mild drought in May after briefly moving out of drought status in April. It had entered a mild drought in January that was upgraded to significant in February. The latest designation follows 2 years of below-average rainfall and declining stream flow and groundwater levels across the state, increasing stress on local water resources. The Drought Management Task Force evaluates conditions over several months. The latest declarations are based on data collected from August 2024 through May 2026. Precipitation in April and May was well below normal statewide. In May, Massachusetts received between 1 and 3 inches of rain, which was 1.5 to 3 inches below normal. The greatest precipitation deficits were in southeastern Massachusetts, Cape Cod, and the islands and the Berkshires. In April, monthly totals ranged from 1.5 to 3 inches. Attleboro recorded 2.26 inches for the month, compared with its typical 4 inches. Through June 9th, Attleboro has recorded just 0.27 inches of rain. Rivers and streams across the region are running below normal levels, even after temporary increases following rain events. Declining stream flow is an indicator that groundwater levels continue to drop, state officials said. While conditions may appear to improve in the short term, groundwater levels take longer to recover. Many parts of the state have gone months without enough rainfall to replenish groundwater levels and stream flow, Tepper said. As we enter the summer months, it is important to be conscious of our water use by limiting outdoor watering to ensure water supplies remain available. Most area communities, including Attleboro, restrict outdoor water use between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. from May 1st through September 30th. In North Attleboro, residents and businesses are prohibited from using water outdoors for non-essential purposes such as lawn watering and vehicle washing from May 1st through September 30th, except under limited conditions. Odd-numbered addresses may water on Tuesdays before 9 a.m. and after 5 p.m., while even-numbered addresses may water on Thursdays during those hours. With the upgraded drought status, those restrictions are expected to change. State recommendations for residents and businesses in areas experiencing significant drought, including those using private wells, include minimizing overall water use and following local water restrictions. Other measures are limit outdoor watering to handheld hoses or watering cans used only before 9 a.m. or after 5 p.m. Install rain barrows to collect water for lawns and gardens. Plant native and drought-resistant species and reduce lawn size. Fix indoor leaks, such as from toilets and faucets, which account for more than 60% of water use, and conduct water audits in larger buildings and businesses to identify leaks and conservation opportunities. At World Cup stadiums, there will be zero tolerance for drones because of the threat they pose. Fans who hear the whirling sound of a drone over a stadium might see it as a nuisance, but law enforcement has long viewed those aircraft as a potential weapon of mass destruction. With the World Cup about to kick off, security is heightened, and there's a zero-tolerance policy for drones over or near stadiums during the 78 matches in 11 U.S. cities. Authorities have ratcheted up counter-drone measures used at the Super Bowl and other major events, while Congress has given law enforcement broader authority to electronically disable drones or shoot them down. The war in Ukraine has become a real-world testing ground for drone technology, and if there is one threat that keeps me up at night, it is from drones, New York Police Department Commissioner Jessica Tisch said. Congress just gave state and local law enforcement the green light to take control of a threatening drone or even shoot them down if needed in December, though the first option will be to disable them electronically and land them safely. Key federal agencies already had that power. The Federal Aviation Administration will restrict the airspace around and over crowded stadiums for World Cup games and fan events, much like it has done for years around NFL and, excuse me, Authorities have ratcheted up counter-drone measures used at the Super Bowl and other major events, while Congress has given law enforcement broader authority to electronically disable drones or shoot them down. The war in Ukraine has become a real-world testing ground for drone technology. And if there is one threat that keeps me up at night, it is from drones, New York Police Department Commissioner Jessica Tisch said. Congress just gave state and local law enforcement the green light to take control of a threatening drone or even shoot them down if needed in December, though the first option will be to disable them electronically and land them safely. Key federal agencies already had that power. The Federal Aviation Administration will restrict the airspace around and over crowded stadiums for World Cup games and fan events, much like it has done for years around NFL and Major League Baseball games. Violators can face fines up to $100,000, see their drones confiscated, and even face criminal charges for flying within 3 miles of the games. But those penalties likely wouldn't deter a determined terrorist. The FBI has spent the last 7 years building up its capability to deal with drones by investing in the technology needed to quickly identify drones and take control of them. And authorities have been using that already at major events. The Bureau also provided counter-drone technology training this year to law enforcement in all World Cup host cities that taught them how to recognize dangerous drones and respond. The military has also developed counter-drone lasers like the ones used along the Mexican border earlier this year and other systems to shoot down drones, but the FBI is not planning to do that during the World Cup because of the dangers involved with the wreckage of a drone falling over a major city. If the drone is intercepted and it no longer flies, it's going to fall. And as we say, no matter what you do, you can't change the law of gravity, said national security expert Hal Kempfer, who estimates that he has trained more than 30,000 law enforcement officers on counterterrorism techniques. The government has invested heavily in systems that should allow officers to take control of suspicious drones and land them safely or jam their signals, including handing out $250 million to help states prepare to protect World Cup matches and the big public events planned this summer in honor of America's 250th birthday. Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen told Congress at a recent hearing that federal officers have successfully dealt with drones over several recent events, including bringing down 8 drones over a Formula One race in Miami and 12 that entered the no-fly zone over the Masters golf tournament. But everybody's a little behind the rapidly evolving technology. biggest concern I have, honestly, with drones, Mullen said. I wouldn't say a vulnerability, but it is one of the areas that we are struggling with every day. The FBI is taking a zero-tolerance approach to protecting the airspace around World Cup events. Devin Kowalski, an FBI assistant director in charge of the Bureau's Critical Incident Response Group, said the agency plans to treat all drones like they could be a real-deal threat. Other federal agencies, including Customs and Border Protection and the U.S. Coast Guard, will take the lead at several stadiums while the FBI protects three of them. When that drone comes into the TFR, Temporary Flight Restricted Area, we're handling it as if it's something that could hurt people, and we're aggressively locating its operator and conducting the logical investigation to determine the nature of the situation as well as to hold that person accountable, Kowalski said in an interview with the Associated Press. ATF Director Rob Sicada said in an interview that the focus now is on protecting the World Cup, but the America 250 events, World Series, Super Bowl, and the 2028 Olympics aren't far behind. Then think about all the events in every community in the country, high school and college games, that are a concern for our state and local partners. So we want to do what we can to help them as best as possible, he said. Derek Ricefield, who is the former president of one of the companies providing counter-drone technology to the host city, said, "This technology in the wrong hands is very scary, and there are many around the globe who want to harm America. We have to assume that there's somebody in Iran who's spending every day thinking about how they can attack the United States on our home turf," says Ricefield, who used to lead Ondas and now serves on the board of a Ukrainian company called Swarmer that makes software that allows one person to control hundreds of drones. Some of the technology could allow authorities to detect drones up to 25 miles out, which would provide more time to mitigate the threat, according to Matt Sloan, the co-founder of Skyfire AI. But it's possible that someone could sneak a drone up close to a stadium and launch it from less than a mile away, which would lead little time to act. And the systems designed to jam the signal from an operator or take control of a drone might not be effective if it is pre-programmed to crash into a stadium full of fans while carrying an explosive payload, or if it is controlled over a fiber optic line. The battlefield tactic that might pose the greatest threat would be sending a swarm of multiple drones to attack at the same time. Even with the best defenses, a few drones might sneak through to the target, as Iran has been able to do with large numbers of its Shahed drones. The U.S. military has an assortment of weapons to knock drones out of the sky, but Iran has still been able to hit targets across the Middle East. But Sloan feels like the government is doing what it can to be ready. The threat is real, certainly, but I do think that there's a lot being done to prepare for it, to educate about it, said Sloan, whose company has helped protect Super Bowls in the past. And then we just need to tell everybody who's just trying to take pretty pictures, hey, this is not the time. Keep your drone in the box. Democrat Graham Plattner will try to unseat GOP Senator Susan Collins in a critical Senate matchup. Graham Plattner won the Maine Democratic primary for U.S. Senate on Tuesday, channeling voter frustration over the high cost of living and overcoming revelations about his past to set up a high-stakes race against Republican Senator Susan Collins. Speaking to supporters in the small town where he was born, Plattner, an oyster farmer and combat veteran, stressed a message of redemption as he promised to oust Collins. Democrats see the race as a top opportunity to flip a GOP-held seat and a must-win as the party tries to claim control of the Senate in November. Plattner's expected win in the primary came after days of questions about his past personal conduct, particularly his relationships with women, that threatened to undermine enthusiasm on the left over his candidacy. If you believe, as I do, that we can change our politics and change our country, then you must also believe that people can change, Plattner said during his acceptance speech in Blue Hill, a rural town where he was born, as the crowd cheered on. And the reason I believe that is because I have lived it. Maine is the only state with a competitive Senate race where voters supported Democrat Kamala Harris over Donald Trump in 2024. Collins is the only Republican senator from New England. Plattner, a progressive who had early support from Senator Bernie Sanders, has said he plans to focus on economic issues such as housing and health care. He'll be facing one of the most powerful legislators in the Senate and one of its few remaining moderate Republicans. Any of those who feel let down or disappointed or disillusioned, it is my job to earn your trust, faith, and support, and I will spend every day of this campaign, and if I have the privilege, every day in the United States Senate, doing exactly that, Plattner said. Maine voters also were choosing nominees for Governor U.S. House. The Democratic and Republican primaries for governor and the 2nd Congressional District will be decided by ranked choice voting after no candidate won a majority Tuesday. After thanking his supporters, Plattner quickly pivoted to attacking Collins, who was unopposed in the GOP Maine primary. Susan Collins has never met a war she didn't like. She's been supporting endless wars since I was a teenager, and I know I had to fight in two of them, Plattner, a Marine and U.S. Army veteran, said. You and your friends profited, and my friends died. He also criticized Collins for voting alongside Trump, stressing she was a key vote in support of putting conservative judges on the U.S. Supreme Court. She has become just as spineless and corrupt as the establishment she now serves, Plattner said, noting that Collins once promised to only serve two terms. First elected in 1996, Collins has said her experience and key position as chair of the powerful Appropriations Committee are two reasons to send her back to the Senate. While others talk about revolution and division, Susan Collins is delivering for Maine communities by funding rural hospitals, supporting our shipbuilders and fishermen, providing infrastructure, expanding broadband, and strengthening public safety, said Collins spokesperson Sean Roderick. Maine people are practical. They care about whether their communities are stronger and their families are better off. That's exactly what Susan Collins is focused on every day. Plattner, 41, has focused his campaign on fighting the high costs he says hold down the middle class and said he got in the race to focus on income inequality. He had early support from progressive champions helping to boost his candidacy. Democratic Governor Janet Mills, who backed out of the race earlier this year after citing trouble raising enough funds, has yet to endorse Plattner. In a statement Tuesday, the governor thanked her supporters but did not mention Plattner. Plattner's background has repeatedly generated criticism from both the right and the left. Old online comments made by Plattner, in which he appeared to endorse political violence, dismiss rape in the military, and criticize police officers and rural America, surfaced last year. Plattner apologized for the comments and said he was struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder and depression when he wrote them. He's also faced questions about a skull and crossbones tattoo recognized as a Nazi symbol. Plattner has repeatedly said he was unaware of the symbol's association, but has since had the tattoo covered with a different design. A former girlfriend told New York Times has since said that he did. More recently, reports emerged that he previously exchanged sexually explicit text messages with several women while married. Plattner hasn't directly denied the text and instead criticized the aide, who talked to news outlets and accused the media of running gossip. The New York Times last week reported that his relationships with previous girlfriends, one of whom said Plattner twisted her arm during an argument and locked her in a room. Plattner's campaign disputed the allegation. Voter Annette Babcock from Sullivan said she's met him a few times and likes that he's not an established politician. His recent controversies didn't dissuade her from supporting him. The Republicans don't have much moral high ground to stand on when they're criticizing him for what he's done when Trump is a convicted felon, she said. No candidate won a majority of the vote in either primary for governor or in the Democratic primary for the second congressional district, so the races will go to ranked runoffs. Those tabulations could take more than a week to determine winners. Democrats are choosing gubernatorial candidates between Maine Secretary of State Sheena Bellows, former Maine Senate President Troy Jackson, former Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives Hannah Pingree, Energy Executive Angus King III, and former Director of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention Nivra Shaw. In the 2nd Congressional District, former Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, State Senator Joe Balducci, former U.S. Senate candidate Jordan Wood, and social worker Paige Loud are on the ballot for the Democrats. The winner will face former Governor Paul LePage, a Trump ally. And I'm afraid I have to stop there as we're out of time.